Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our Hideaway studio in East County. Election Day is Tuesday, and polls are showing Donald Trump drawing even with Hillary Clinton in key battleground states, although Clinton still has a solid lead here in California. Now, in late-breaking news on Sunday, FBI Director James Comey announced that Hillary Clinton should not face criminal charges with regard to emails found on a computer that belonged to disgraced Congressman Anthony Weiner, who was married to top Clinton aide Huma Abedin. The announcement may give Clinton a last-minute bounce in key battleground states. Now, while most of the media attention has been on the presidential race, we've got some updates on several contentious local contests. In the Helix Water District, someone leaked a candidate's confidential personnel file to our media outlet. Now, we're not going to share the contents of that file, but we are going to talk about who might have leaked it, because doing so is a crime. And in the 50th Congressional District, Democrat Patrick Malloy is blasting Congressman Duncan Hunter for repaying $49,000 in personal and unauthorized expenses that Hunter charged up to his campaign. Are these mistakes or corruption? We'll have details on today's show. On Green Scene, hear about a major wind energy project that's been approved on public lands in East County, and why some environmentalists are fighting this clean energy project in court. On Crime Beat, we'll have a warning about a scary assault over Halloween weekend in the college area. And then we'll have a heartwarming story about friends hosting a benefit concert for an Alpine teenager battling cancer. Plus, we'll tell you about a county project called Seeds of Change to help inmates learn job skills and beautify our county parks. Hear about a new animal shelter that's finally been approved to start construction in El Cajon, 12 years after voters first approved the project. Today, we have two newsmaker interviews. The first is Nick Marinovich, who chaired a bond oversight committee in a Sweetwater school district where discovery of a pay-to-play scheme led to convictions of public officials. Marinovich also served on the Grossmont Union High School District's Citizens Bond Oversight Committee, but he resigned because he says oversight there is too lax. He's here today to talk about Grossmont's Measure BB, a school bond proposal that he warns has pay-to-play elements and more projects listed than could possibly be funded. We'll also be speaking with Oda Youssef, a San Diego State University student and Valhalla High School graduate who is running for the Grossmont Union High School Board, seeking to bring a student perspective. From Public News Service, we'll have news about progress being made in California to prevent youth prison inmates from reoffending and being reincarcerated. Then we'll have tips on how to find your polling place and where to drop off your mail-in ballot on Election Day if you haven't already sent it in. We'll also have information on two competing ballot measures related to a plastic bag ban in California. Plus, we'll have announcements about openings on the Spring Valley Planning Commission and new programs bringing relief for property owners with dry wells from the drought here in East County. So stay tuned for all of these stories and more on today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters.
There's a leak in the Helix Water District. No, we're not talking about water pipes. Someone with access to confidential files at Helix Water District has violated state law and district policy by anonymously mailing our media outlet confidential personnel records on a former Helix employee who is now running for the water board. We won't violate privacy rules by publishing the contents of that personnel file, but we did speak with the candidate, Lou Tejeda, who gave us permission to disclose that the leak was a notice of a proposed disciplinary action 21 years ago. Tejeda believes that notice was sent in retaliation after he filed a racial discrimination complaint against the district, which the district found without merit. He contends, "They disciplined me for filing a complaint. That's illegal. I filed legal action against them as well," Tejeda adds. The lawsuit settled, but a confidentiality clause in the settlement agreement prevents him from disclosing the terms, Tejeda says. We contacted Helix Water District regarding the leaking of Tejeda's personnel file. Lisa Stoya, Director of Administrative Services, confirms, "Personnel files are confidential and are not a public record," she adds. We will be investigating this matter. Who might stand to benefit from tarnishing Tejeda's reputation and have access to decades-old confidential district employee files? He's been an outspoken critic of both management and board members. Tejeda says he thinks someone at the district perceives him as a threat if he wins the election. Tejeda is running against three opponents for a seat in Helix Water District Division 1, incumbent board member John Linden, plus challengers Dan McMillan and Aaron Zajac. Besides differing with his opponent's views in the campaign, Tejeda has also criticized the district's general manager, Carlos Lugos, for approval of construction projects that Tejeda claims were not built. In addition, Tejeda has been a vocal critic of past board actions, notably over appraisal of land sold for a proposed sand mining project in El Monte Valley. Tejeda does not oppose mining, but argues that the land was sold too cheaply. His past lawsuit and personnel issues may also have alienated someone else on staff now or in the past. We've asked the district for a record of everyone who has asked for Tejeda's personnel file in the past year, and we'll report back if we uncover evidence of who accessed those two decades-old confidential files and may have broken the law by leaking them to the press. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Jonathan Goetz.
This is East County Magazine's Capitol Report, bringing you the latest news and newsmakers from our nation's capital. Congressman Duncan Hunter has announced that he will repay nearly $49,000 in personal or unauthorized expenses charged to his campaign, the Riverside Press Enterprise reports. The action comes months after revelations that Hunter charged up large sums for an Italian vacation with his family last Thanksgiving, as well as money paid to his children's private school, a Hawaiian resort, an oral surgeon, and purchases of jewelry, groceries, video games, and more. Federal law flatly prohibits candidates or elected officials from using any campaign money for personal expense. Hunter previously repaid $12,000. After Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington, or CRU, filed an ethics complaint, Hunter indicated he would have an outside audit of his campaign. Hunter's aide, Joe Casper, has claimed that CRU is a leftist organization targeting Trump supporters, according to Patch.com. Congressman Hunter did endorse Trump early on and continues to support his candidacy. However, CRU has a long record of targeting members in both parties. CRU's list of the most corrupt members of Congress includes 5 Democrats and 11 Republicans, and its list of congressional members under investigation as of April included 6 Democrats and 4 Republicans. Hunter and Casper have offered various explanations for the expenses, including use of the wrong credit card and error for some initial purchases. Some items had misleading descriptions in campaign reporting filings. For instance, purchases at an Italian jewelry store were listed as food and beverages, but the shop told the San Diego Union-Tribune that it does not sell food or drinks. Hunter told the Riverside newspaper that out of an abundance of caution, he decided to reimburse any expenses not adequately supported by documentation. The publication provided no details on just which items will be reimbursed and which may not be. Hunter stated that he takes full responsibility for any errors, adding, "I am fully confident that the right oversight and controls are now in place to prevent repeat errors in the future." But Hunter's opponent, Democrat Patrick Malloy, says the problem is not simply sloppy bookkeeping. It's corruption, he says. Malloy told East County Magazine, 4 days before the election, Hunter tries to buy your sympathy with a $49,000 appeasement. He further accused Hunter of allowing his vote to be bought, citing as an example an icebreaker ship that Hunter lobbied to fund for the Coast Guard just days after he got a hefty donation from the manufacturer. Now, it's unclear whether the Fair Political Practices Commission will take action against Hunter for violations or not, but Malloy has this to say to voters, "I'm squeaky clean. Don't wait for the FPPC to do what you can do on Tuesday. Vote him out." Hunter also drew criticism back in April from Republican Central Committee member Eric Anderson, who posted on San Diego Roster that Hunter's explanation at the time was not an adequate explanation, not even close. The prominent Republican added that the real question is how could Hunter, also a Republican, have acknowledged errors in his campaign disclosures but not immediately rectify them by paying back the money, going several months without addressing violations of the law. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is Miriam Raftery with a Green Scene Report. The State Lands Commission has approved a second phase of the controversial Tule Wind Project in McCain Valley. Tule 2 will allow up to 24 wind turbines to be built after completion of Tule 1, which will have 52 turbines, each of them hundreds of feet high. Phase 1 is slated to break ground soon, with expected completion in September 2017. The two projects together will have a combined estimated capacity of about 202 megawatts. Additional turbines are set to be installed on adjacent federal and tribal lands belonging to the Weipai Band of the Kumeyaay Indians. Revenues from turbines on state land will help fund pensions for California teachers, says Harley McDonald, spokesperson for Avangrid Renewables, which is a division of Iberdrola, the Union Tribune reports. The project will also help California and San Diego County attain renewable energy production goals. She contends the project's negative impacts will be largely mitigated. But the project has been vigorously opposed by environmentalists and many rural residents. The Protect Our Communities Foundation has filed a lawsuit in federal court seeking to halt the project, contending it will kill protected golden eagles, bats, and other wildlife, as well as ruin spectacular views on public lands. The Audubon Society and Backcountry Against Dumps, or BAD, have also opposed the project. Donna Tisdale, founder of BAD and chair of the Boulevard Planning Group, says Tule Wind will have serious impacts to residents and resources that cannot be mitigated. She notes that power purchase agreements are with Southern California Edison, meaning the power will flow to Los Angeles and won't help the city or county of San Diego attain its green power goals. Tisdale objects to the county giving Tule Wind a waiver of new low-frequency restrictions that Boulevard's planning group fought to get included in the county's wind energy ordinance. Those restrictions were meant to help protect at-risk and predominantly low-income residents, including tribal members and others already adversely impacted by the existing Kumeyaay wind turbines that have generated complaints of stress, health, and quality-of-life impacts. Tisdale adds, wind turbines and their electrical infrastructure also represent new sources of wildfire ignition in our drought-stressed backcountry. Tule Wind's inadequate fire-related funding is a pittance, she says. Opponents of Tule Wind say they do support renewable energy, but they want to see it generated with solar on rooftops and parking lots, not in or near scenic public lands, such as the previously protected McCain Valley, a wildlife management and recreation area that is also the gateway to federal wilderness regions.
This is East County Magazine's Crime Beat. On the streets, reporting on crimes impacting communities across our region, helping to keep you safe and informed.
This is Rebecca Williamson with the Crime Scene Report. A man riding a skateboard in the college area Friday night got an early Halloween weekend fright. The victim told police he got into an argument with someone across the street. When he tried to leave, he was assaulted by four people wearing clown costumes. He was stabbed in his abdomen, shoulder, and cheek. Fortunately, the injuries are not considered life-threatening. It is unknown whether this attack is related to the creepy clown craze that has been sweeping the nation, with people in scary clown masks terrorizing communities, though no violence has been reported until now. Police have asked the public to help to locate the suspects. If you have information on this crime, please call San Diego Police or Crime Stoppers at 888-580-8477.
This is Jonathan Getz on KNSJ with a report on local teens who are determined to help their best friend as she fights bone cancer. 16-year-old Samantha Bodger lives in Alpine and is a top student at Granite Hills High School. She was diagnosed with osteosarcoma in August and needs 10 months of intensive chemotherapy as well as major surgery to amputate her leg in mid-November. Her friends are organizing Singing for Sam, a fundraising event that will be held at Campbell Creek Ranch in Alpine on November 11th from 4:30 to 8 p.m. The outdoor concert will feature live entertainment, including the Alpine Dance Academy and talented musicians Rayleigh Nicole, Chapel and Whimsy, and Phil Villalobos. There will also be a dinner, silent auction, raffle, and Sam Fam shirts, hats, bracelets, and bumper stickers, with proceeds to help fund Samantha's medical costs. For more information or tickets, you can visit Sam Fam Support on Facebook. That's Sam, F-A-M, as in family.
There's some good news for shelter pets in El Cajon. El Cajon's Planning Commission has unanimously approved a conditional use permit Wednesday to start construction of the new El Cajon Animal Care Center. Voters approved a half-cent sales tax increase to fund the $10.5 million shelter under Proposition O way back in 2004. The new shelter will be more than double the size of the current shelter with room for expansion. It will be located on North Marshall Avenue within a block of the old shelter. Construction is set to begin in the spring with completion later next year. The long delay has been blamed on a change in design plans and architects, as well as awaiting responses from neighboring cities to partner on the shelter, and so far, only La Mesa has followed through to contract with El Cajon on the project. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is Rebecca Williamson with a report on a job training program at the East Mesa Detention and Reentry Facility that is taking root at county parks. Trees and plants that were cultivated and grown at the jail's greenhouse will be planted at five parks around the county this month, including Lakeside's El Monte Park here in East County. The Civics program is a partnership between the Sheriff's Department and the County Parks and Recreation. Inmate workers perform tasks including landscaping, cleaning county parks, trails, canals, and ditches, clearing vegetation, creating fire buffer zones, as well as trimming and cutting hazardous trees. The program started in July 2014 to help inmates develop skills and work habits needed to secure honest employment after their release. Gardening can be therapeutic and give inmates a sense of purpose while serving time behind bars. The work they do for the county parks also helps inmates build healthier connections with the community, the county reports. To be eligible for the program, inmates must be housed at the East Mesa Jail and have 6 months or less left on their sentences. They can't have been convicted of violent or sexual crimes. While outside, a deputy is on site and watches inmates at all times. The instructor from Grossmont Cuyamaca Community College teaches inmates basic horticultural and landscaping skills. Inmates graduate with a certificate of participation, also growing their opportunities for success once they have paroled back out into the community.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea. Public interest news for our region.
Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our Hideaway Studio in East County. Today we're going to be talking about the school bond measure, Prop BB, in the Grossmont Union High School District. And my very special guest today is Nick Marinovich. Nick is a former member of the Citizens Bond Oversight Committee in the Grossmont District, and he's the current chair of the Oversight Committee in the Sweetwater School District. Nick, welcome to the show.
Thank you, and good afternoon.
You've told me there are some very serious problems with this bond measure, and obviously you know a little bit about bond measures. I would say quite a bit about bond measures. For starters, you've indicated that it seems to list more projects than could be funded with the $128 million that are in the bond. Tell us about that.
Well, the state constitution and the voter, as coming into the voting booth, ought to know what they're being asked for to how to spend your money. And the projects listed in the bond measure for BB are well over the $128 million being asked of the voters. So there's no priority list of projects, and there's no specific list of how they're going to spend the money. And the voters really asked to figure out and trust that the district is going to know how best to spend $128 million.
It's really astounding to me that they did this, because this is a district that has drawn a huge amount of controversy. For two prior bonds, Proposition U and Proposition H, in which they did list projects that supposedly were going to be funded, but the number one project that many people thought they were voting on, which was a new high school for Alpine, was never built
They claimed they didn't meet the threshold for enrollment. Other people said they did. But the bottom line was they spent money on a bunch of projects, at least some projects that were never listed in the bond, Olympic-sized swimming pools and theaters, and did not build the high school that was so critical for the people of Alpine.
That's true. And in fact, the Citizens Bond Oversight Committee that I was on refused to even really deal with the question of whether what the district did was proper or not. And that's one of their charges. They're supposed to be independent, and they're supposed to tell the citizens who are spending their hard-earned money, am I getting what I asked for when I voted for it? And the committee does not do its job. And that's one of the significant problems about the current bond measure, is that you don't really have right now the comfort that you have the citizens committee that's supposed to look out after it really do so.
Right. I mean, Sweetwater had a lot of problems over there, but eventually I understand they implemented some reforms, so they now have a citizens bond oversight committee that truly performs a watchdog function. Is that correct?
That's true. I, as you mentioned earlier, I'm the chair of the Sweetwater Bond Oversight Committee, and it's dramatically different than the Grossmont Bond Oversight Committee, which I resigned from. And it was a bad committee before, but when the district began its corruption problems, it got its act together eventually, and now it's a well-run bond oversight committee.
We should say for listeners who may not be familiar with the Sweetwater situation, they had a pay-to-play situation out there, and there were actually criminal indictments brought and some convictions against a couple of people out there.
True. The former superintendent spent some time in jail, as well as a former trustee for pay-to-play.
And so far that hasn't happened out here. Now, back for a moment to the issue of not delivering what they promised in these last two bonds. The county grand jury found that they essentially had misappropriated bond monies and told them they either needed to build the Alpine High School or turn the money over to an adjoining school district, the Alpine Union District, so that it could build it. The district voted to do neither. So the parents up in Alpine sued the district, the Grossmont district. That's still in the courts. We're all paying, if you live in that district, a lot of money for these lawsuits that keep going on and on and on and on. And this could actually lead to the breakup of the district, because the parents in Alpine have filed a unification petition that really is about breaking up the district and getting that money back, a portion of that bond money, and giving it to the Alpine Union School District, which currently only goes up through middle school, so that it could become a high school district and build the school, and we would lose all that ADA money out of the Grossmont District. So when you came to them, other people came to the Citizens Bond Oversight Committee and said, hey, there's this grand jury report. You know, you ought to take a look at it. What was their reaction?
Well, they practically, basically decided not to react to it, almost poo-pooed it as, that's really not within our purview, is kind of what I heard when I was on the committee.
Why don't they care?
Why don't they care? You know, it's hard to read their minds. My perception is that these people believe that the primary function of the Bond Oversight Committee is to sort of support whatever district activities are going on.
Now, these are people that were appointed to the so-called Oversight Committee by the school board itself, right? So you're saying they're beholden more to the people that appointed them than they are to the public that they're supposed to serve?
It would appear that they are influenced by whoever appointed them to the board, or by a direct and clear involvement with the overall activities with the district that sort of puts them in a cheerleader role for the bond program, which is, in my opinion, what they primarily view their function on this committee. Or at least they act like that. They never ask tough questions. That's the problem I had with it. Anytime a tough question was asked, it was marginalized by the chair.
So you actually resigned in protest over that. Now let's fast forward again to the current bond, bond BB, that is going to be on the ballot on Tuesday. Another issue with this that you've pointed out is that there is a pay-to-play component. Tell us about that.
Yes, pay-to-play, in simple terms, is where contractors, people who stand to benefit from something, give money to a entity that they expect something in return. And this often can be legal, but essentially it occurs where contractors, consultants who do business with the district, give money to the bond campaign. And then there's an expectation, maybe implied, that as a result of a successful bond campaign, they will receive a contract subsequent to its passage.
So that seems like it's maybe not so beneficial for taxpayers, because shouldn't there be an open bidding process? If projects are needed, should you pick someone based on open bidding or just based on the fact that they gave money to support a school bond?
Well, in theory, it can be that way, but, you know, in the selection of consultants, if it's not purely a competitive bid where there's some element of objectivity for selection, say with architects, there's a potential that there's long memories of who gave the money and who ought to get the contracts. And if you look at the people that are giving money to this current bond campaign, they're the same people who have current contracts with the district. Just last Thursday, there was a $3.7 million contract awarded to a contractor, Erickson Hall, who gave $25,000 to the current bond campaign. That just doesn't sound
right. That is a lot of money. It seemed to me when they're deciding which of these projects they should give priority to, we know we've already established there's nowhere near enough money to fund them all that are listed in the bond. That should be a concern. Are they going to give preference to some guy that put in $300,000 or more versus somebody else who may be the contractor on an even more worthy project?
You just don't know. You know, that's the problem, is something like that is very hard to prove. Mm-hmm. But, you know, a lot of building the trust in the public is, how does it look? Does it feel right?
Well, another thing that doesn't look so good is something that was exposed in a Union Tribune article this past week, where they wrote that the Superintendent Glover, apparently has been calling and asking staff and students to participate in phone banking to support Prop BB. We don't know if this was done on school time, but if it was, that would be completely illegal. There's also the intimidation factor. If the superintendent, who's your boss, calls you up, even if you're at home, and says, hey, we'd love you to come down here, you know, to some private site and do phone banking, you know, that's really a questionable practice, isn't it, Nick?
It is, you know, it's just, there's a very tough legal area to say what's freedom of speech and what's legal or illegal. The point is that if it doesn't look right, it probably isn't right. Whether it's legally not right is one thing, but whether you have flyers with superintendents' names about fiestas to go to contractors to support a bond measure, it just doesn't feel right.
So the contractors are putting on parties, fiestas now, too.
For a BB proposition support.
Very interesting. You have testified before the Little Hoover Commission before on bond issues. For listeners who aren't familiar, tell us briefly what the Little Hoover Commission is and what your testimony was all about.
The Little Hoover Commission is essentially a bipartisan state watchdog accountability organization that provides recommendations on government reform statewide. And I was called to testify as a local school bond chair, the only one in the state mm-hmm. called to testify on why the Sweetwater Bond Oversight Committee works so well and recommendations how to improve bond oversight. I did that, and Sweetwater is, to their credit, the district has got their act together, and they got a great committee.
Very good. And how does that compare to the Grossmont District and the Grossmont Committee?
It's diametrically, it's a joke. The Grossmont Bond Oversight Committee is a joke. It does not function as intended.
What's it going to take to change that?
A board that decides to appoint truly independent and empowered citizens to purport the good, bad, and ugly about the bond program.
Okay. Well, there's two seats up on that board in District 1 and District 2, so I suppose a potential for some new faces to show up in at least two of the five districts. We'll just have to see what happens there. Now, another potential reform that's been proposed is something that the state treasurer, Mr. Chang, has come up with. Can you tell us about that?
Treasurer Chang issued a press release in July of this year stating that any financial advisor, underwriter, or bond counsel that gave money to local school bond campaigns would be precluded from any contracts with the state treasurer for their services.
And the status on that, is this just a proposal? Does it have to go through the legislature or what?
No, it's just, I think it's just an administrative policy that if I don't really know exactly how they implement it, but they just said, if we find out that there's a firm giving money to these school bond campaigns. They don't get the treasurer's money in terms of contracts.
So is that in place now, or is that something going?
It's in place now.
So these people could be in trouble, or not be able to.
If they were reported, and there are contractors, there are bond councils that have given money to the BB campaign that presumably fall under that press release.
Okay, so there may be some consequences down the line for some of those that are doing this.
People report it.
Okay. Devil's advocate question would be, as problematic as this bond is, Nick, I do need to ask, since we don't have the other side here today, are some of these projects critical? I mean, are you telling people not to vote for this, or if people vote against it, are we liable to see, you know, crumbling infrastructure and school buildings that are falling down because they don't get the funding?
No, you know what? I guess what I'm saying is don't vote for a new bond measure now. You need in place measures to make sure the money is spent properly, that there's an accountability for how the money is spent, and you have a real bond oversight committee. I'm not opposed to new bond measures. That's not why I oppose this one. I oppose it because of the way the district handles its bond program presently.
Yeah, so maybe taxpayers may wish to send a message to the district that they want a more carefully crafted bond the next time that has some protection, so that people know if they're voting for something, the projects they vote for are what's going to actually be funded and built, and, you know, perhaps some limits on who gets to donate to these campaigns, so that we don't have people who are profiting off of the projects funding them.
That's correct. I you couldn't have said it better. I mean, I couldn't have said it better myself. I think that's what you want to know, how the money's going to be spent. You can't tell when you vote for BB how the money's going to be spent.
Okay.
As a taxpayer, that's basic right.
All right. Well, we are out of time today, but Nick, I really want to thank you for coming on the show today. Listeners, we've been speaking with Nick Marinovich, who is the chair of the Bond Oversight Committee for the Sweetwater District, where a lot of good reforms have gone in place, and he formerly served on the Grossmont Union High School District Citizens Bond Oversight Committee, which apparently, according to Nick, is still in need of a lot of reforms. Nick, I'm going to let you have the final word today. Is there anything else that you would like our listeners to know?
Just that BB is the wrong bond measure at the wrong time. And then in the future, I'm sure if under the right circumstances, I'll be the first one to support a new bond measure if reforms are enacted.
Okay, very good. Thank you so much for joining us today on the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
The East County Magazine Show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interests, not special interests. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Now stay tuned for part two of the East County Magazine radio show. Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our Hideaway studio in East County. Today it's my special pleasure to be interviewing Odeh Yusuf, who is one of the candidates running in the Grossmont Union High School District for District Number 2. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, Miriam. I really appreciate it.
Now, you've reached out to us asking for the interview today, and I would like to start by finding out a little bit about your background. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about who you are and why you decided to run?
My name is, again, Odeh Yusuf. I'm a candidate for the Grossmont Union High School District in Area Number 2. I was born and raised in San Diego, California, in East County specifically. Went to Rancho Elementary, Hillsdale, Valhalla. I'm currently a student at San Diego State University in my third and final year studying political science. I am 20 years old and a recent graduate of the district. I've always been involved in any way I can with student government, local events, local government, in any way that I could possibly be as a youth advocate, as a student advocate. And it's something that I've always had a passionate for. And I decided, you know, I have so much going on, but I felt that there was a need for a true youth advocate, a former student on the board. And I said that was the best time for me to run.
Very good. I am curious, as it's unusual for us to see a student come forward and run for the school board, although it seems like a good idea, mm-hmm. since students know from the inside out maybe what's right and what's wrong with the district. What do you think, you know, a couple of the best things are that this district is doing for students, and what do you think most needs to be changed from a student's perspective?
There's some things that I think the district does very well, and that's cross-district communication and organization in terms of getting input from students and from teachers across the district together in one cohesive spot. You know, there's a different boards and events that people from all over the district can come to as one thing, and I think that's very helpful, and it's something that they've done well, considering the district is not split up in any way. It's all through one governing department. It comes together, and that's the way it's been, and I think for a lot of things that works well. Now, what I don't think it's always doing well is supporting specific students. One, I don't think students are listened to as much as they need. Student input is undervalued in our district, and it's something that I'd like to change. As a former student, as a current student at San Diego State, as a youth, it's something that I think I can bring to the board and need to address. And, you know, there are problems within the schools that administrators and people at the district and on the government board don't hear about because they're not at the schools.
Can you give us an example of one of those?
Of course. One of those is support for multicultural, multilingual students. These students are not given the support they properly need, and it's unfair to not only the students but the teachers as well, because we put the teachers in impossible situations where we give them students who don't speak their language, who are just coming out of war zones or very impoverished areas, and we're throwing them into class and expecting them to learn about U.S. government or mathematics with no help in terms of language or in terms of culture.
Yeah, you've certainly seen that firsthand. I know that you were born here in America, but you're of Iraqi Chaldean descent, the Iraqi Christians, so you certainly, you know, must see this a lot among your friends and family.
Yeah, and even though I was born here, I actually didn't learn English until I got into kindergarten. I grew up in a multilingual household where English was not one of those main languages. And, again, I started kindergarten is when I started to learn English. I wasn't exposed to it as much for me to grasp onto it. Obviously now over my years in education, it's obviously improved, but these students are coming into high school. They're not coming into kindergarten, and we're expecting them to be at these upper levels of education. And it's truly a burden on them and, again, on the teachers.
Mm-hmm. Now, tell us what District 2 includes. I know that's La Mesa, Mount Helix. Is it part of Rancho San Diego as well?
Yeah, it's about half of Rancho San Diego. It's the west side of Hamasha is where they cut it off.
Okay.
It's a small snippet of El Cajon, parts of Spring Valley, parts of Lemon Grove, and most of La Mesa and Mount Helix.
Very good. Now, we should mention that there are four candidates running in this race. One of them is the incumbent, Jim Stieringer. He's a Republican who in the past has been endorsed by the Republican Party, and interestingly, this time they did not endorse him. He crossed paths with them on a vote. You know, he wouldn't continue to support funding the lawsuit over the Alpine High School. And they yanked their support, and they're endorsing Kevin Conover, who is I believe he's a minister. He teaches Bible studies instead. The other candidate in the race
is Elva Salinas.
Yeah. Elva Salinas is endorsed by the American Federation of Teachers. Interestingly, the Grossmont Education Association, which is the local teachers union, did not endorse anybody, and that was because of the deadlines and the fact that the district was going to these trustee elections, and so I think they just didn't know who was running at the time they were making those decisions, we understand. And Oda, you have the endorsement of the County Democratic Party. Is that correct?
That is correct. I was lucky enough to get their support over Salinas and the other candidates.
Congratulations on that. Now, there have been some very deceptive mailers that have gone out in this race. Can you tell us about the one that went out in your district and what voters should know?
Yeah. So these were paid for by the American Federation of Teachers, their local chapter here in East County. They, on one side, claimed Democratic voter guide and touted a lot of one of my opponents' Democratic endorsements. Now, those endorsements came because those individuals are part of the American Federation of Teachers, the same individual who ran the mailer. So, of course, they're going to endorse.
Yeah, so they touted, say, people on other school boards that were Democrats, but they stated that she was the Democratic endorsed candidate, and she's actually not. You're the only one in that race endorsed by the County Democratic Party. And listeners, for those of you that may be in the other district, District 1, Chris Feit is the Democratic endorsed candidate in that one. Now, I should mention that over in District 1, there was also a deceptive mailer that went out over there. And that one, oddly, listed Reverend Roland Slade as a Republican. He's not. Reverend Slade has posted on his Facebook page that while he's conservative in most things, he is not a Republican. So we've got these deceptive mailers out there in both races. The endorsed Republican in that race in the other seat happens to be Bill Babbitt, who's on the La Mesa Spring Valley School Board.
Yeah. And again, this just speaks to the role of these mailers and this group in the election. You know, I have great respect for unions and the work they do for teachers, and I'm supportive of the work they do and the rights they fight for. But, you know, if we want our teachers in Grossmont to experience a different union, they need to go to the teachers, not through the board.
Interesting. So this is kind of a fight between two unions?
Well, yeah, because Grossmont does not have any, is not AFT whatsoever. They are GEA, the Grossmont Education Association, which is part of the California Teachers Association. This is a power grab. AFT has the Grossmont Cuyumaca Community College Board, a lot of other school boards throughout the county, and this is their way of going in. The two candidates they're helping have not done any of their own money, any of their own campaigning. I don't even believe they have websites. It's all AFT bankrolling them, and it's an unfortunate power grab.
Very interesting. Let's move on to a couple of other issues. Certainly, probably the most controversial issue that the Grossmont Board has dealt with is the issue of having two past school bonds that they pushed through that people voted for, and one of the things included on there was supposed to be building a high school in Alpine. The district later claimed the enrollment trigger was never met. Some say it was. A grand jury agreed with the people of Alpine and basically concluded that this was amounted to a misappropriation of bond funds, and yet the district still hasn't built it. They're asking for more money and yet a third bond. The parents in Alpine have sued the district, and that's being fought out in the courts right now, and this could lead to the split up of the entire Grossmont Union High School District. Parents in Alpine have filed what's called a unification petition, which really is disunification. It would break up the district if it's approved by the state and ultimately by voters and let these folks split off and go to the elementary district up there in Alpine and have it, you know, become a high school district so that they could eventually get this money out of this district and build the school if the suit prevails. What are your views about building an Alpine High School number one? And also, would you support the district continuing to fund this lawsuit, a defense in this lawsuit to continue fighting the Alpine parents? Or do you think it's time for an olive branch and some healing to go on?
We have to stop spending money on lawsuits that are just continuous. Maybe in the beginning it was worth it for the board at that point, but at this point it's too much. You know, these Alpine students, what we're doing is putting a limit to their education. We're requiring them to drive such a distance to go get a proper education. That is not the American way. That those limits should not be there, especially when we can avert them. You know, this is not just a Democratic issue or a liberal issue or whatnot.
No,
I know Republicans who are in favor, who are angry that the high school wasn't built.
Right, and most of the parents that are suing up there are Republicans or were at one time.
Okay. It's just, you know, it's unfortunate. I thought the bond language was very clear when voters passed it before I could vote. When voters passed it, apparently the board thought otherwise. The money has been spent. Unfortunately.
On other projects, some of which were not in the bonds.
Yeah, on other things. I want there to be a high school in Alpine. You know, it's, my position is very simple as that.
Okay.
Is it going to hurt the district? It might hurt the district. We'll get less funding. We'll be losing students, but that's something our district will have to adapt to because otherwise these students themselves are putting a burden on their education. And that's just, that's unfortunate. It's almost, as if, we're getting not through to them properly.
Okay. Another lawsuit the district is embroiled in is this one was filed by the district seeking to shut down several charter schools, including perhaps the most controversial is the Diego Valley Charter, which serves primarily minority students, a lot of Latinos, a lot of Middle Eastern and Chaldean students, some African American students. Many of these people came as refugees or immigrants. They were already over 18 when they came here, so they couldn't go to a high school in the district. Or they're working multiple jobs trying to support their family, and they need flexible hours that the district can't provide. Do you support the district's action in trying to shut down these schools, or would you, if elected, try to be a voice to change that?
It's a bit of a mixed issue on this one. I'm not in favor of continuous lawsuits. I think that's spending district money in places where it doesn't need to go. But at the same time, I am in favor of the district boasting its adult education programs. The district has 3 adult high schools and over 50 adult schools that are located on sites that the district doesn't own, libraries, churches, and whatnot. And these services aren't touted enough. So, let's play the economics game. We will have our adult schools and make them the best schools in the area.
Okay.
But again, I am not in favor of continuous lawsuits. That's just a burden on the pockets of taxpayers in East County that support the district.
Okay. Are there any other issues that you would like to bring to the attention of voters and listeners today?
Yeah, one of them, one of the reasons I'm running, I talked about my support for multilingual, multicultural students, but also for youth advocacy. I was served on the board of the East County Family YMCA as a youth advocate, as the teen advocate, and I've served in, as the SU and in my high school time as an advocate for students and whatnot in a number of positions. And I think that's something the board lacks. There is a student representative on the board who doesn't have a vote and who does not have access to closed session meetings. And this is a problem. We need someone who's been a student, who is a youth, who truly understands the problems facing students and youth, and who understands their concerns and who can communicate on them. I don't want to communicate with students as a governing board member to student. I want to communicate with them as a student to student, as a youth to youth, because that's the best way to get information out of them. They're only going to tell the older adults what they want to hear, certain things. They're not going to be able to communicate effectively unless they're communicating with someone of their own statue. And that's one of the, one of my main concerns. And in the mailers that went around, it touted my opponent as the only candidate with public education experience. And that's not true. I have experience and I'm the only candidate with Grossmont Union High School district experience. Again, that's as a student, but we have to value the resources students has, value what I took in my time as a student and being able to transition that into policy, into public thinking in a way that, some people think we cannot. Being a student has value and it does give you experience and insight on the best way to govern. And that's where I will govern from.
The last question I have is, do you have an opinion about the current school bond that is on the ballot for the Grossmont Union High School District, the school bond measure BB?
I'm in favor of almost all school funding increases. I know there are people who have issues with them, promised contractors or different groups or developers. I know those are issues and those are real issues. And it's something that when bonds come up on the ballot in future use, if I'm elected to serve on the board, there will be no promises made. But it is a school funding increase and schools need as much funding as they can get. Again, it's not perfect. It will never be perfect unless the system is reformed or unless we have the right people in place. But I am in favor of it. I'm always in favor of school funding increases when they're manageable. And this is one of those that I feel is manageable. I've done my research. I've talked to people. I've talked to teachers. I've talked to students who are in favor of it. And I will support it and I will vote yes on it.
Okay. Listeners, if you just tuned in, we've been speaking with Ode Youssef, who is one of the candidates running for the Grossmont Union High School District Board in District 2.
Thank you very much, Mary. My website is odeyousef.com for more information or contacting me.
And can you spell that, please?
It's O as in Oscar, D-A-Y, YOUSIF.com.
Okay. Thank you very much for joining us on the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ.
Thank you, Mary.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, public interest news for our region.
California stands out for its work in turning young lives around in a new report on youth prisons. The Annie E. Casey Foundation research pulls together evidence of the ineffectiveness of youth correctional facilities, showing they are expensive and prone to abuse, and concluding they fail at reform. It recommends closing all youth prisons and reinvesting in other types of programs. Casey Foundation President and CEO Patrick McCarthy says California is a good example, as a number of juvenile justice reforms reduced the number of youth in state custody from 10,000 in 1996.
The last figures I saw is that they had 700 in those facilities today because they provided incentives for the counties and the communities to take responsibility for their own children.
The report notes that California also passed legislation to only admit youths to state facilities who have committed serious offenses, enacted programs to increase prevention, and closed 8 of its 11 large youth corrections facilities. According to the report, systemic maltreatment has been documented in youth prison facilities in nearly half the state since 2000, including California. McCarthy says it's the result of a model focused on security and control.
They are staffed by corrections officers, and in some facilities, things like mace have been used, long extended isolation, shackles, handcuffs, very brutal methods of controlling a young population.
Instead of what he calls the outmoded assumption that locking kids up improves safety, McCarthy says the corrections culture should focus on rehabilitating them.
We've got to build a juvenile justice system that's based on the very simple principle of developing young people's capacity, giving them opportunity, holding them accountable, of course, is also very important, but doing it in a way that provides them a path to get back on track.
According to the report, youth incarceration rates in the United States far exceed those of other countries. For Public News Service, I'm Mary Sherman.
You're listening to the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, your network for social justice. Tuesday is Election Day, but lines at polling places might be long due to the two-card ballot with so many initiatives on it, says County Registrar of Voters Michael Vu. If you have a mail-in ballot, you can drop it off at one of 24 mail ballot drop-off locations throughout the county or at the Registrar of Voters office. For a list of locations or to find out your polling place, you can visit sdvote.com. Your polling place should also be listed on the back of your sample ballot and voter information pamphlet. For more information, voters can call 858-565-5800. And the website again is sdvote.com.
California voters soon will decide if the state's ban on plastic shopping bags will stay or blow in the wind. The 2014 ban is on hold pending the outcome of Proposition 67, a simple referendum asking voters to decide whether or not to uphold the ban. Then there's Proposition 65, which Stephen Maviglio with the Yes on 67 campaign says complicates things. That ballot initiative would redirect a 10-cent bag fee from retailers to what opponents say is an unclear environmental fund. Maviglio notes Proposition 65 will only go into effect if it gets fewer votes in favor than Proposition 67.
Prop 65 is on the ballot only because the plastic industry put it there, just to confuse voters. The people that want to protect the plastic bag ban want a no vote on 65 and yes on 67. So with 17 measures on our ballot, it's very confusing and daunting.
While Prop 65 supporters claim the measure would help protect the environment, opponents argue it's an attempt to distract voters. Meanwhile, the industry contends plastic bags are recyclable and account for small amounts of litter. But Maviglio counters the bags are not biodegradable and one of the biggest culprits of waste in the world. According to the World Economic Forum, there will be more plastic than fish per pound in the oceans by 2050. Joshua Hanthorn with Defenders of Wildlife in California notes that plastic debris is responsible for the deaths of nearly 10,000 marine mammals each year, as well as birds and fish. He says endangered sea turtles are particularly susceptible to the effects of plastic bag trash.
It gets trapped in their stomach, which prevents them from properly swallowing food. Many bags are found in turtles, and it causes their unfortunate fatality. That's the number two cause of sea turtles' death throughout the world.
Maviglio believes Californians understand the dangers of plastic shopping bags, with bans already in place in 151 communities. He says many shoppers are either bringing their own bags or not using one at all.
What we've seen in these communities is upwards of 90% reduction in overall bag use. So it's not a switch from plastic to paper. It's just a dramatic reduction in bag use totally. So the impact on consumers is very small.
He says if the ban is upheld, California would be a national leader by becoming the first state to prohibit plastic shopping bags. For Public News Service, I'm Mary Sherman.
This is Miriam Raftery, the editor of East County Magazine, and I am proud to announce that we have picked up 3 awards in San Diego Press Club's 2016 Excellence in Journalism Awards competition. Our entry titled Border Fire Leaves Residents Burned Over Bureaucratic Bungling won the wild card category, and this year that category was Border Region Issues. That means in the wild card category that our media outlet beat out media in all categories for this prestigious award, including TV, radio, newspapers, and magazines countywide. In the daily newspapers and websites category, we also won second place for multicultural reporting with our article titled East County Chaldeans Plea for Release of Iraqi Christians Detained at Otay. In addition, we picked up a third place award for environmental reporting with our story titled Planning Commission Guns Down Appeal Allows Covert Canyon to Conduct Military Firearms Training Amid Federal Forest Lands. Since our inception in 2008, East County Magazine has won a total of 97 awards, including many of the top journalism awards given in the San Diego region. As nonprofit community media, we reflect the public interest, not special interests. You can volunteer to become a citizen journalist, donate or underwrite our nonprofit news service by contacting editor@eastcountymagazine.org, and you can read our news at eastcountymagazine.org.
The Spring Valley Community Planning Group is seeking 2 new members due to the resignations of 2 members. Losing members has been a continual problem with the 13-person planning group, mainly due to people leaving the area. If you want to have a say-so over planning decisions on projects such as housing developments, parks, and commercial sites, this is your opportunity to get involved. Any Spring Valley listeners interested in joining the group can attend a meeting at the Otay Water District headquarters at 2554 Sweetwater Springs Boulevard at 7 p.m. on the second and fourth Tuesdays of each month. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Jonathan Getz.
Across East County, many property owners have been struggling after their wells have run dry. If you own property in San Diego County with a dry well due to the drought, here's some good news, finally. A new emergency water distribution program is offering to help residents without access to running water for drinking and sanitation due to a dry well. In addition, residents who qualify can receive low-interest loans to replace individual water well systems and install temporary water tanks. The water assistance is not for landscaping or agricultural needs. The program was created through an executive order issued by Governor Jerry Brown. Local assistance is available through the County of San Diego and the Rural Community Assistance Corporation. For a low-interest loan, applicants must own and occupy the property or plan to purchase the property with the dry well, and they must earn an annual gross household income of $62,883 or less. For the emergency water distribution program, applicants must own a property with a well that has gone dry due to the drought and live on that property. They must also earn a total gross monthly household income of no more than 200% of the federal poverty level and have plans for a long-term water supply solution. For more information, you can visit readysandiego.org/emergency water. That's readysandiego.org/emergency water or call 858-565-3490. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ. This is Miriam Raftery.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technician, Liz Alper, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, royalty-free music, and Pond 5. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.